when some other folks found out what he was doing, that were higher up the Toyota food chain, they said, "Oh, you got to go onto the line." And he was like, "Yeah." He's like, "We're not allowed. We have to ask permission."
In a world filled with uncertainty, two semi-intelligent, somewhat interesting, Midwestern, Family Guy, business coaches with dad bods, provide mildly insightful ideas through their semi-focused dialogue. Welcome to It Doesn't Take a Genius.
Ramsey!
Marshall, I'm hoping that my audio sounds a little stronger today. I realized in our last episode that I recorded it with the microphone set to picking up omnidirectional.
Ooh.
And I think it was getting an echo. Now I've got it set up cardioid, as the cool guys call it, where it's sort of heart-shaped and pointed at me. So I'm hoping that our listeners, both of them, really appreciate it.
It wasn't until this moment that I connected the cardioid setting on my microphone to the heart shape. I'm so sad. I thought it was this very sophisticated, specific audiophile terminology, and it's like, no, shaped like a Valentine.
That's pretty much it.
See, I was thinking it was way better than that. Once again, missed it by a mile. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad we were able to, kind of help you. I did take some broadcasting courses, and I'd like to think I helped you sort of go to the source, if you will. Go to where it happens and find some things out.
I now understand where the source of that word came from. And so, yes, I'm very excited, which leads us to our topic today. And our topic is Genji Genbutsu. And this is the part where you go Gesundheit. Like he had a little Genji Genbutsu on his sleeve.
I enjoyed that for breakfast. It was delicious.
I gave up the Mucilex, went with the Genji Genbutsu as my main fiber source. I got exposed to this working with a small auto group. We've got a couple auto groups now that have Toyota stores.
Yes.
And as part of the Toyota way, there's four elements. The two one that most people are familiar with is the concept of Kaizen.
Yeah.
And there is no such thing as the best. It can always be better. Right. The idea of continual improvement. So, we've talked about
always improving.
Always improving, always looking for just that 1% more. And we've talked about that. And so, I think a lot of people are, it's kind of made it into mainstream society now, and it's a fairly mainstream idea. But Genji Genbutsu, I think, is a simpler idea that just hasn't gotten the mainstream acceptance. So with this breakthrough video, we're going to put it on the map. We're going to let people know what it is and why it's important to you, whether it's life or work. It could make a difference. So the term loosely translates in Japanese to either go to the source, or simply some people translate it to go and see.
Yeah.
So go to the source. I was talking to the stores who've had it in their stores for a while, and then there was three different examples of how this came into play. And so the go see piece of it, basically they started using it in terms of not jumping to conclusions. So I had the group yesterday, and we were working, and I asked them, I said, I had about 30 managers. I said, how many times have you acted upon secondhand information only to find out later that you didn't have all the facts?
That's right.
And 100%. Yeah. I just did it about 5 minutes before I came into the room. It's such a common thing. We get a little bit of information. We take that as the gospel. And then we make a decision, we make a process change, we have a conversation, and only afterwards do we go, oh, I didn't know everything that I needed to know about this situation, about this process, right. that this was a one-off thing, right? We changed our whole process based upon this one outlier that may or may never happen again. And if it does, it wouldn't be as dramatic as keeping our existing process. So you know, that rings true with a lot of people. And you've heard managers talk about, you know, some of the different ways they force themselves to combat this. Any examples come to mind?
About a million. I think this has followed us our entire career, Mike, since you and I have known each other. Because frankly, the continuous improvement movement, which, you know, came from Dr. Deming going over after World War II to Japan to help them rebuild their economy. And he was helping them look at statistics and looking for quality measurements that they could measure and constantly improve. That's where this all comes from.
And please note that Mr. Deming tried to share his idea in America.
100%.
They weren't having it. Then he took it to Japan.
That's exactly right. They sort of listened to him during the war, and then they were like, yeah, I think we'll go back to our old ways now. But the Japanese were hungry and really good listeners, frankly. And so a couple stories. One is I had a client that the parts, let's see, I'm gonna try to make this as brief as possible. We had two departments that were not talking to each other. I mean, literally, the managers refused to be in the same room together by the time I got to the store. Nice. They were so mad at each other for setting up it was basically a loyalty card for this company, for their customers. They were setting it up different ways, and it was penalizing the other department, right? It was coming out of their budget based on what they were doing. Long story short, I went to the source, right? I went back and forth between the two of them all day long. It was like shuttle diplomacy. And I finally got them convinced that neither of them were actually seeing what the other person was seeing. Like that one of them had to be wrong about how this whole thing started, or you know, there was something desperately wrong here, because reality did not match up with what they were saying happened. And I'm sort of, you know, painting in broad brush strokes so I don't betray any confidences here. But the long and the short of it is I got him in the same room. We started talking, and then we found out that we still had not gone to where it happens. We still were not talking to the source, because nobody had actually asked the accountant. So they went to the office and talked to the manager of the business department. And the business department manager said, I've been doing it this way. Why have you been doing it this way? Well, you guys never told me anything. I just assumed this was what I was supposed to do. So from the get-go, these two people who were literally unable to speak to each other had never brought the back end of the organization into the conversation. And so they were literally unable to speak to each other because of this. If they had just gone to the source, you know, why did this happen this way? We talk about the five whys. You know, that's another one of the Japanese concepts, Toyota concepts, that let's keep asking why until we get to the source, to the root. And so this is, I mean, I could go on and on about examples of where people have shot first, asked questions later. And if they had just asked the questions first, if they had gone humbly to wherever it was that this problem happened to investigate, learn a little bit more, be a reporter, be a detective, it would have saved them so much trouble in the long run.
Oh, yeah. When you think about just in that specific case, how much lost productivity, how much lost time was spent on this non-issue.
My client paid me for a day of work, and that is the one thing I accomplished, because I had to keep going, having separate conversations back and forth. We could have solved that before I got to the store by them just talking to the accountant.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I saw one the other day. Customer comes in, talks to the general manager. This particular dealership customer's upset. Nobody's helping me. The car's been sitting for days. Nobody's communicating, right? The GM's like, I'll get to the bottom of this. So he goes, bypasses service manager, goes straight to the technician who's working on the car. Technician's like, What are you talking about? Here's what I've been working on this thing almost nonstop, and then he's like, I don't know what the service manager is talking about. So finally after the GM, apologized to the technician for getting on his case, right? He goes to the service manager, and service manager lays out, they basically had been, just coddling this customer. They'd already goodwilled over $1,000 worth of repairs. It just, this guy's like, we gave him a loaner car. We gave, this is all we've done for this guy. And the GM's like, oh, never mind. he was going to go in there, and I think that's one of the keys to this, right? He had great intentions.
Oh, sure.
I'm going to be this customer's advocate. I'm going to, taking care of the customer's job one, and I've got the power to make great things happen, and I'm on it, and miss the whole thing.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the big applications here of this particular episode is, would you, we've talked about this before from a coaching perspective, just ask one more question. Just stay curious just a little bit longer. And in this case, it might be with, a big problem that brews internally and is affecting operations and efficiency and so on, or it might be that customer situation where a customer throws a hand grenade and frustrates you. But either way, I wonder what else I need to know.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what else I need to know.
Well, here's some questions. All right. So before you jump to a conclusion, ask yourself, right, the simplest of questions. Do I have all the information?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Do I have all the information? I've got GMs. As soon as if a customer calls them direct, the first thing they do is they start bringing up the ROs or the whatever the information that they can have, right, so they can arm themselves so that they can before they get even anybody else involved.
Yep.
The ask yourself, is there more here than meets the eye? So this is what's presented, mm-hmm. right, what's under the surface. Mm-hmm. My favorite one of this that I think we miss is this out of character for this person?
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Right. The story you're telling me, just and we've said the words like that just doesn't sound like them.
Yeah,
and you're like, okay, yep. Had a wonderful example of this. My daughter came home one day. She was real tiny, and we kind of had one of these Mayberry-esque backyards where all the kids played at each other's houses, and all the parents were pretty much on the same page parenting wise, and. The daughter came home and she goes, you need to go yell at Toby, the dad across the way. And I'm like, why do I need to yell at Toby? Because Toby yelled at me. I'm like, wow, that's terrible. Before I go yell at Toby, what were you doing before he yelled at you? Well, the bridge over the concrete culvert? I'm like, yeah. She goes, well, I was standing on top of the railing. I'm like, huh. And then Toby yelled at you. Huh.
Weird.
Yeah, that's odd. I said, you're right. We're going to go over and talk to Toby immediately. And you're going to say, thank you. This isn't how I thought this would go at all. you're not listening to me, right? This is, but had I, it would have been very easy as a parent, to go all postal is like, be like, nobody yells at my child, that's my child. Nobody has the right to yell at my child and just go off. But it just like, I kept thinking, he's just not, that's not what he does. I it's out of character for him. So there must be more going on here. Right.
So I'll throw in a couple more questions if you don't mind. Sure. One is, what do you mean by fill in the blank? Whatever is the thing that's been brought up as a problem. I actually learned this from a professor, and it was to be used for philosophical debates. Let's define our terms before we move forward and are all frustrated and, upset at each other. What do we even mean by that thing that we think we're arguing about? So this comes up all the time. And I've got a daughter story. I probably have told it here before, but You know, she came out and said, I can't sleep. And I was impatient and wanted to watch a TV show with my wife. And I said, well, think about what you want to buy your siblings for Christmas and think about that, and I'll help you go back to sleep. I just gave her a pat answer and sent her off to bed, you know. And like maybe 20, 30 minutes later, she comes back out. And finally, like my dad gene kicked in. I was like, oh, wait a minute. Something's wrong. And so I said, what do you mean you can't sleep? And she told me about this. We may have talked about it on the podcast, but there's this Apple Watch commercial that they sense have discontinued, and it's terrifying. It's basically the Apple Watch calling 911 saying, you know, Bob's in the woods. He's at this location. He's had a fall. He's not responding. Please send emergency vehicles. You know, it's awful. And it's just a pan over a creepy forest environment. Anyway, there was more to that story, but like, oh, that's the issue. We've got to tackle, you know, that concern that she had. It's not, I'm restless, or, you know, I want to be out of bed, or whatever it is. That was the issue. I had to ask more questions to get to, you know, what's really going on here? What's at the source? What's the real motivation here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The best part of your story is when your first remedy was go think about commercial materialism.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that is a sad dad move right there.
I'm a fairly shallow person. It always worked for me. I don't know why it wouldn't work for her.
Think of things that we should be buying.
Right.
That's your go-to. Okay.
Right. Like I say, not my proudest moment, but you know.
Great recovery. Yeah, you recovered, right. Recovered nicely. But yeah, are we in agreement on the definitions? You know, right. So-and-so's being disrespectful to me. So-and-so's ignoring me. So-and-so, you're right.
Yeah.
Right. What do you mean by being disrespectful? What do you mean by, you know, all of a sudden you're coming to a, you know, maybe it's not what you pictured in your head is what they're talking about.
And that leads to the follow-up, which is, how did you arrive at that conclusion? In mm-hmm. other words, tell me the data, the observations you're making, the things that are making you think that this is what's happening. It's incredibly useful in interpersonal reactions where you're fighting with each other, but it's also, you know, useful for, you know, a factory wide issue where, you know, we think we've got this problem. What's leading us to believe that's a problem? Maybe we ought to go measure it. Let's go to the source and find out what really is happening.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. We've got managers who, you know, they've got a standing rule. If you come into their office complaining about another person, then the rule is I pick up that manager picks up the phone, gets the other person in the room, and we all talk about it together.
Yep.
That's it. Right. And so I've got other managers. They do. I'll listen to their side, listen to the other side, then both people in the room at the same time.
Yep.
Right. Yep. We'll talk it out. So either way, they're going to see, they're going to the source. They're trying to get firsthand information.
Yeah.
The next piece of this, they talk about, Genji Genbutsu allows you to learn from each other, and they also believe that it leads to connections.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I thought about an example of that. I had a number of GMs do this. The most recent one, where the general manager of the dealership decided that he was going to go work in the quick lube, quick lane, the fast oil change drive, with his team members. And so he comes in, you know, and they always declare they're going to do it till lunch. None of them ever make it.
They don't last.
Right. So they, you know, the boss puts on his jeans and then he gets a, you know, technician shirt, and he goes out there and he's helping change oil and inspect the cars and rotate tires and do this stuff. And I thought about, right. So, I'll throw it over to you. You know, we didn't prep this or anything, but what do you think are some of the things that the GM discovers in the 2 hours that he's working with that specifics that team?
I suspect that they're pulled in a number of different directions. Cars pile up. They're given too many assignments at the same time, and there might be a parts opportunity as well. Creeping into that conversation.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's process issues that are discovered. You know, these guys have been doing it. They don't feel like they have the power to change it. So they haven't brought up any of the, you know, so within 15 minutes, the manager's like, why are we walking all the way over there? Why don't you have this tool? What, how come those guys aren't getting back to you? What's, why is there a line here? It, you know, all of a sudden, right, by going to the source and to go see it, you start to, you know, and I've had like changes made instantly, like, like in the moment where we, where we've changed processes and made their lives 1,000 times better. The connection piece, all right, this leads to connection. One of the things that happens is, A, the Loop Tech guys get a huge kick out of watching the GM do his job, do their job poorly.
Yeah, suffer.
Right, right. It's like, this guy's terrible. Yeah, and he's so slow, and he doesn't know what a torque wrench is, you know. Yep. And so there's this, this camaraderie, this connection that's fostered. They appreciate the heck that he came down to walk a mile in their shoes, right? Yep. Experience your, you know, life from your perspective, literally. And they respect, they admire that. And then they get a big kick out of being able to do something better than the boss.
Yep. So, you know that Genji Genbutsu is not a foreign concept to me growing up, because my father worked in manufacturing. And so we talked, you know, with hallowed respect about the Kaizen process in Toyota. And I'm sort of not exaggerating. Dad got excited about this stuff. And I live near the Georgetown, Kentucky plant, where it's the biggest Toyota plant in the world. It has its own interstate exit. They've, you know, over the last few years, they built Avalon's, Camry's, Sienna's, Lexus's. I think the new electric vehicle is going to be there. And I had a chance to work there for a couple days, and I have family and friends that have worked there over the years. Two stories that really point to how this this connection piece really happens at Toyota, where they baked this idea up. One is when they had the problems with quality in the mid 2000s, and there was the brake issue. You know they quickly recovered. And I asked a good old boy who worked there from Eastern Kentucky, I said, so what changed? He said, well, things got worse when the white man took over. It was like when we abandoned the Japanese way, you know, the way that they approached us, things changed, because the Americans weren't as plugged into what was going on down here. They didn't understand. They were just throwing numbers at us and, you know, making us hit targets, and suddenly our hallowed quality standards went away. And so, you know, I wondered about that, you know, like how baked in were those quality standards and that respect that they had for the people that were working the line. I talked to another gentleman who was an engineer, and he asked, he was in a completely different industry, but working in manufacturing. And he asked if he could take a tour. And I don't remember all the details of how this bubbled up, but basically he got access to the floor and got to go down onto the floor and be led around by some of the team leaders. And they showed him some things that gave him some ideas about continuous improvement in his neck of the woods. Well, when some other folks found out what he was doing that were higher up the Toyota food chain, they said, oh, you got to go onto the line. And he was like, yeah. He's like, we're not allowed. We have to ask permission. Wow. So I want you to think about, you know, that level of we so value what you people are doing that we're not going to mess with it. And if we come down, we're going to come down in respect and say, can we come down here and observe what's going on? You know, it's the exact opposite of what happens in a lot of dealerships that we've been talking about, where the general manager gets fired up and, you know, runs off, you know, hot to the touch to a department to solve a problem. Let's go find out what's going on. We trust you all. We respect you. It's treating people with dignity at all levels of the organization. And that's the connection point to me. That was Toyota's genius, was we're going to treat everybody here like they really do count.
Mm-hmm. Well, and by demonstrating, by going to the source and asking for their feedback, their perspective, you're saying that I value that, right? 100%. I value your perspective. I value your feedback. And that's amazing. So the last piece of this is the Japanese believe by going to the source, you can get inspired. And I thought about that, and I was like, well, what's an example of that? And I thought about my first car was a 1967 Mustang, probably the most beautiful year of that car, right? In 68, they got side marker lights and changed some stuff. But that 67, you know, and that whole first generation up until about 72, from 64 and a half to 72, was just iconic, right? They sold a million cars the first year. It was this huge hit. The second generation Mustang was the Mustang II.
Yes.
One of the ugliest. Yeah. I slightly modified Pinto with some different fenders and just widely panned by the Mustang enthusiast. They tried to recover with Gen 3. They came out with the Fox body.
Fox body, uh-huh.
The Stealth, right? Let's just put a bunch of right angles and, you know, straight panels on it, which the early Mustangs were just almost Ferrari-like in their curvature, right? We abandoned all that. Then the fourth generation, they went with, hey, everything's looking like the Taurus, the bubble Taurus, right? Like, they made everything look like a raindrop.
Yep.
So you get this bubble Mustang that was just, it was just horrible. And so, you know, but they still sold enough that they wanted to have the fifth generation. And so the chief designer was assigned for the fifth generation Mustang. And he said, well, let's go to the source. And he did something that he wanted to inspire his team of designers. He said, before we make a single line on a piece of paper, here's what we're going to do. And he went out and he got the first generation Mustangs. He got a 65, a 65, a 67, 69. And he brought them to the parking lot and he made all the designers go outside and wash them by hand.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, right. So he wanted them to, you know, because anytime you wash your car, right, there's ridges and bumps and design cues that aren't readily available to the eye, depending on your perspective, but they're a key part of the design DNA. And he wanted them to feel every panel, right? Feel the lights, feel the curvature of the wheel wells, the whole thing. And then they designed the fifth generation Mustang, the 2005, which was a massive hit because it's
huge hit.
Yeah, it just harkened back to all the design cues, all the things that made the first generation great. And I thought, you know, the idea was inspired to think about, all right, how do we get back to what made this originally amazing? And then how do I do it in such a way that's participative, interactive, and that there's tremendous, very quick learning about this vehicle and the idea of hand washing these original cars to inspire the designers. Just one of my favorite automotive stories of all time.
Yeah, I love that. And I hate the fourth generation Mustang so much. And so I really appreciate you highlighting that. But that's happened so often, right? That somebody says, okay, wait a minute. What is really the essence of what makes us awesome? You know, we had glory days. What was the essence of that glory? I'm thinking of Harley Davidson, right? Like they, when they went through their renaissance in the, late 90s, early 2000s, it was the, I can't remember if it was the president or the CEO or both, but he had a notebook, you know, just a little flip, you know, notepad of paper that he carried with him at all times. And anywhere he was out and saw somebody with a Harley, you know, he would go and talk to them. You know, what do you love about this? What makes a Harley? And he got all these notes that he brought back to really, you know, it was a true renaissance for the entire organization. And a number of companies, you know, have to do this when they're reinventing themselves. When they're at the best, they're not reinventing themselves. They're going back to the essence of what made their product or service great in the first place. But you don't just do that in a vacuum. You do that by going back. I mean, you have to go to the place. You have to go where it happened. So I love that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. The idea of, I can be inspired by recalling what originally inspired me. What was the original, you know, nugget? I love your word, essence, that made this great.
Yeah.
So the Genji Genbutsu way, right? Directly observe. It should become a way of business.
Yeah.
Right? This is what we do, is when we have an issue, we go to the source. going to the source for inspiration, and then building relationships and creating connections in the process of those interactions.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That's awesome. One last story, and I hope it gives folks some insights into how they can do an employee team. But I once had an employee team where they were trying to figure out, you know, our parts department is really growing. What do we need to do? You know, what could we do to, you know, sort of enhance our, maybe our layout of our building, or, you know, something that would change our processes so that it was a little easier to get the parts, because it just seems like it's getting harder to, you know, we just have so many parts. And the parts manager was interviewed by the team, and he said, well, I mean, yeah, it's pretty bad. You know, we have all these trailers, and we're kind of having to make it up as we go along because so many parts are coming in. And they were like, what do you mean? I said, well, let's go find out. Would you mind if we take a tour? And he had, I think at the time we were up to 13 like tractor trailer sized trailers.
Oh my gosh.
And during a rainstorm, we took a tour of all 13, you know, opened it up. Could you fit more? No, nothing more could go in here. Nothing more could go in here. Anyway, long story short, that team was not the sole reason, but it was one of the points where, you know, the owner got a message that was, there is no way that we have so much. And they ended up buying an entire property that became a parts warehouse. As soon as they bought it, they essentially filled it up and were ready to expand. I mean, that's how much business was there. And I don't even want to tell you the dollar amount of revenue that they bring in monthly now. It's just awesome. Just amazing. But none of that would have happened if they hadn't literally stood up and walked out of the room. And instead of having a meeting in the boardroom, they went out and got to see what was going on actually in the environment. So they literally did Genji Genbutsu in the moment. And the rest was financial history for that organization. You can get inspired in all sorts of ways.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Just get up and go see.
Just go.
Yeah, just let's go look at it. You know, just and be that wildly curious manager who just wants to see it and discover firsthand, right? Let's see what's going on and build connections, get inspired, and directly observe what's going on.
I want to say one more thing. If you are not the kind of manager who is wired to be that empathetic person who's really people-oriented, you will be shocked, if you do this the right way, how incredibly respectful and humble you come across. And I don't mean humble at like a meek person who has no power. I mean the kind of person who respects those that he works with. You will get so much extra goodwill out of this. It's just going to blow your mind. Because it is respectful. It is an incredibly respectful way to treat other people, to say, let me go see what's going on from your perspective. So this is just, it's powerful for a number of different reasons. And I think it's why Toyota won the ball game in the 90s. So I'm glad we're doing an episode about this.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And people are excited. It's been my experience. People are excited to show you how they've made it work, right? Here's how we make this thing work. And they're also excited to tell somebody about the parts that are frustrating them.
Oh, right?
And to show them, right? This thing here, right? This window here, we can't pass this. You know, this is not working. And yeah, I see that. Yeah, right. So, either way, they seem to be excited to share the wins and the opportunities that they're experiencing.
Nailed it.
Excellent. Well, speaking of going to the source for all narrator wisdom, we'll turn it over to our man, Mr. John Wolfe. Take it away, Mr. Wolfe.
And that's a wrap. The musings of Mark and Mike. No rights reserved, etc. Feel free to share and discuss what you heard today. Even claim the ideas as your own. Who'd want to do that? See you next time on It Doesn't Take a Genius. Thanks.
That's good enough.